This is an interview with Mr. J. Kenneth Gran for the Youngstown State University History of St. Nicholas Byzantine Catholic Church Project by Mary Lou Shirilla at the Parish House, 1898 Wilson Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, on November 20th, 1986, at 7 p.m. Mr. Gran, before we begin talking about yourself, can you give me some background about your family?
Well, the name today is Gran, G-R-A-N, but I was born Joseph Garankovsky, or Garanchovsky, as they would say, po-nashomu. I was born in 1925, and I was baptized in that same year, and also confirmed as Byzantine Catholics, or Greek Catholics were at the time. And of course, in 1935, I received my first Holy Communion at this parish. My parents, my father passed away in 1928. His name was Nicholas Garanchovsky. And of course, he was married to my mother's maiden name was Mary Biros, B-I-R-O-S. And of course, then my mother stayed a widow for about 6 years, and she remarried in 1934, and she married my present stepfather, Michael Cole, K-O-L. And of course, I've been blessed with, I didn't have any brothers and sisters. I was the only son of a steelworker parent. And I have three half-brothers and two half-sisters, one passed away. Well, actually, you see, three half-sisters, three half-brothers and two half-sisters, and one passed away just last year. I've been in memories of the church in my early childhood.
Okay.
Used to live not too far away from here. In fact, when I was born two blocks away from, one block away from here on Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Avenue at 19 Montgomery Avenue, North Montgomery Avenue. And of course, we stayed in the immediate area, what they affectionately known as Hazleton area.
Right.
And we moved when my mother remarried from Center Street, we used to live on Center Street, to the first street as you go into Camel, which is Palmer Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only two blocks away from the church, so all of my going to and from church was walking. I never drove an automobile to go to church or rode an automobile or a trolley to go to church. All we did was walk to church. And actually, during the times of the early Depression, I can remember a lot of memories here also in the parish. And of course, for what it's worth, I never knew there were so many ways to make potatoes. My mother had so many recipes of making potatoes. But there are a lot of memories here at the church. And of course, when I was born, the church was already 13 years old. And of course, this present edifice that we have today was 6 years old to be able to build in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my family is, my mother is still living. Of course, my father passed away. My stepfather is still living. My mother's 84 now, and my stepfather's 82, and my three, the others are all relocated from there, except
I
for
see.
One.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sister that goes to the parish at Martha and Jack Cashjack, and the others, that's the only parishioners that are here now, that particular family. The others are in Arizona or in other parts of the country. But I'm still a member here in my parish, in my family, and of course my children married into what we to the Roman Rite, and of course they go to Roman Rite parishes.
Mm-hmm.
But they have some memories and some fond memories of St. Nicholas Church.
Okay. Going back to your own childhood, then you lived right here in the neighborhood, so. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Who were some of the neighbors? Were they mostly parishioners also?
Well, you had names like Garanchovsky.
Mm-hmm.
There was quite a few families. You had the Coleys. You had Bednar family. You had the Sharshan family. Just to mention a few, you had the Fuser family, Banaski, Vrabel, Halliday. To mention a few, Barillac family on Hazeltine here. These were all young people I grew with, the Planeys, many of the Planey families were still here, and of course the Backuses, I'm trying to think of some of the others, the Piatucks and the Pollocks, but we had a lot of camaraderie, and of course we used to, I was a member of the catechism classes where I can remember we used to come down and play underneath the church, and we even had, for a short time, we had catechism across the street at the, what they call the Old Hall,
right,
or the first church that we ever had. But Father, I mean, I should say, Cantor John Horvat of blessed memory, who was one dynamic person who has had a lot of influence on my life from the standpoint of Byzantine tradition and Byzantine teachings. He was my catechism instructor, and of course, you didn't get your lesson or do your lessons, and you were terrible, you were bad in the catechism class. You had to spend some time kneeling on a few ashes or stones in order to rub on your knees. But those were sort of, they weren't that severe as far as penalties were concerned, but I can remember a lot of the teachings as far as the catechism classes, and we were taught in, how to speak in, in fact, I can still speak very fluent Rusyn or Slovak, as they refer to it, even to this day, and I understand it fully. Of course, at those days, we didn't speak too much English, especially at home or even in church. In the beginnings of the church, it was mostly Rusyn, as they referred to, R-U-S-I-N. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I can relate to a lot of weddings, a lot of church functions and socials across the street. We used to have picnics. I can remember going to picnics where they were held at the Blasco property over here on Star Street, or the Galetka property on Cortland Avenue, and we had picnics at the Olenek Farm. Then I can still remember the first Russian Day, or Rusyn Day, as they called it, at Idora Park. We used to, in fact, I was a youngster, used to look forward to that because it was an all-day affair. Those were some of the pleasant memories of childhood. I can remember the hard times, too. I can remember when you paid 10 cents for a loaf of rye bread at the the Schwabel Baking Company, used to be located on Lawrence Street. I can also remember the home bakery right here on Wilson Avenue. The Manis family used to run it. I can remember the Isley location, which was next to the Hazelton Post Office downtown. I mean, over here on Wilson Avenue, where you can buy a skyscraper ice cream cone for a nickel. Mm-hmm. I can also remember selling on weekends a bus pass for a dime on a Saturday, or a nickel, because it was a dollar for the whole week. And used to look forward to picking up a few nickels on a Saturday evening. These are all memories of Hazelton. And
sure.
Hazelton Confectory, which was run by Hector Heidis. And, Nick, I can't think of his last name, but he was the last owner of the building on the corner here of our church property. Those are memories of Hazelton area, and
right,
the church area, and the good times we had in the floor, or I should say the basement of the church when I was a Boy Scout there. Like troop number 53, our first scoutmasters were Joe Hallis and Steve Truhan of our parish, who were our first scoutmasters. And we used to have scouting classes on the dirt floor of the church basement. So those are some memories I have in my youth about the parish. A lot of warmth and a lot of love amongst the parishioners.
Now, you emphasize that this is the Hazelton area. There was a Hazelton family here originally, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. The Hazelton family owned the property where the church is located now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was purchased, if my memory serves me correctly, in 1918 for the fabulous price. I can't remember. I think it was $15,000. We purchased that property. I mean, the parish purchased the property.
Yes.
And of course,
mm-hmm.
And they built the church in 1919, and I don't know whether you know this, but this church was patterned after a church in Czechoslovakia that was the cathedral church of what they call Užgorod,
yes,
in vernacular. And of course, our first so-called priest of that particular parish was in 19, I think it was, what's his name? I think it was Father Papp, P-A-P-P. He came, and of course after him came Father Lipitsky, L-I-P-I-C-K-Y. But these are some of the memories I have. But I don't remember these priests. The first priest that I remember in the parish by name was Father John Krushko, K-R-U-S-K-O. Okay. That's the first priest I remember being a part of the parish.
From my early days,
right. Uh-huh. I don't remember Father Papp or any of those others.
Okay. I'm going to get off the subject of your own personal memories for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I want to ask you about the research that you did as part of the 50-year celebration of the parish. I know you did a lot of it in conjunction with putting together the Jubilee book, and I was wondering if there's anything that you could tell me now that you came up with at that time.
Well, it was, again, thanks to the blessed memory of Father John, young Father John, John W., because I distinguished the both of them. One is Father John W., the other one was his father was John S.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And of course, I was on the program committee with some of our other leaders of the parish, which were here at the time, and such as Nick Fabian, some of the early parishioners, Al Vrabel, and we worked on his program book with Father Romack, and just for my own sake, I learned quite a bit about my parish before I was born, and of course during my early years, realizing that our people in the early 1900s used to, of all things, either take a trolley or walk to the west side, which was St. Mary's on the west side. And for if you had a large family, it was very expensive to ride a trolley. So they used to take and just to walk back and forth to church until they got the idea, 19 organizers of the church in conjunction with Father Medvecki, who was a pastor of St. Mary's at the time. They had their first fundraiser. I think they raised $60 from what I learned. But the enthusiasm was high, and of course in the new parish was organized January 7th on Christmas Day, the old Julian calendar of 1912. Later on, they purchased if you have a congregation, you must have a parish, I mean a church, so the parish had to have a church, and they purchased a Swedish congregation church across the street, which is now what used to be our hall, which is now owned by a painting contractor. We purchased that church, and of course the first pastor of our church was Reverend Alexander Kosse, K-O-S-S-E-Y, and of course Alexander Papp came after him, and of course Basil Lipitsky, and of course as I mentioned John Krushko was the one that I remember, and of course after them came Father Sabo, and of course Father John S. Romack. The cemetery that we own on Hyatt Street, which is used to be East Youngstown, Ohio, which is now Campbell, was purchased in 1914. Father Papp made that purchase. And we built the church that's now on the Hazelton property in the year 1919. And we had some trying times, let's face reality. I mean, in 1929 we had the crash and the depression. And we were able to weather the storm, so to speak. Today I think we're in fairly good financial status.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are memories also in the 30s where we had some conservatism versus liberalism in the church, and the so-called controversial English Mass and English Sermon, but Father Romack, Father John S. Romack, was in 1932 gave the first English sermon in our church.
Right?
And of course, we started catechism in English then at the same time. We used to have it in Ponashomo. And I can remember a song that I remember very vividly, if I may.
Go ahead.
Just to give you a little bit of a memory that I sang at Cantor Horvath's affair when we honored him. And this is a song he taught us. Mamko, mamko, kupniknishku, tintu papirita blitsku, boya poizem doskoli, uchitisha povoli, boya poizem doskoli, uchitisha povoli. Now that's a memory I have from Father, Father from Cantor Horvath. And it was just that we were to learn how to speak or to learn how to sing in our language. He taught that with that, you know, that ticker that they have as far as the timing was concerned. But of course, with the high mass that we have now in Russian and Ponashoman, of course, the English mass which we have at 5:15, and also 9 o'clock, the low mass on Sundays. Another thing was controversial in our parish in 1946. We made the drastic change where we were went from a January 7th Christmas to December 25th. And I think it was a very good move to this day. It was controversial, but it was very difficult to explain to people sometime. How could you be a Greek Catholic if you don't speak Greek? We changed that to Byzantine Catholic at the same time.
Oh, that same year changed the calendar?
Yeah, we went from Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. And I think that was a wise change. And of course, since that time, I think our church has prospered. We made some purchases. Father Romack had the wisdom and the foresight, I guess someday, maybe even for a church or maybe a school or a hall. We purchased some property on Shady Run Road, which is today known as Shady Run Grove. That was in 1937. And in 1938, we purchased these three lots on this side of us. That was supposed to be a school that we envisioned for our, it's across the street from Hazelden Motors, for the church. That was Father Romack's dream, but that never materialized. We were negotiating with some nuns to take over that particular school, and that lingered so long that we lost out. So,
I see.
And then, of course, in 1940, we did the basement of the church. We sold the hall across the street. I think we got $15,000 for it to the people that had it for a while. After they bought it from us, G&G Contracting or whatever they were. And we started the, of course, we built some other stuff, for example, around here, which we have now have a parking lot, which instead of a school, we have a parking lot. But our parish got to a point where Father still had visions of a school. And so through the wisdom of Father Romack and the bishop, they were able to come together and five parishes organized to put together, and they purchased the Olds estate on Youngstown Poland Road. I think the purchase price of that was back around, I think they paid $75,000 for that in 1952. And we negotiated with the Sister Servants of Mary Immaculate, which are still there. And of course, the school got underway in May 1953.
I think the Order of St. Basil the Great is there.
Oh, is that who's there now? Yeah, I thought it was Sister. Oh, well, then it must have changed. You see, now that's how much I know about the school now since I've been out of there. But the first school administrator was appointed in 1955, and that was Father John S. Romack. And then, of course, our parish, because of the duties, we needed an assistant. So our first assistant pastor that we were, our assistant priest that we ever had, was Father John Philo Horlack, who is now at in Newton Falls, the parish at Newton Falls. I think it's St. Mary's in Newton Falls. He's the pastor over there to this day. And of course, 1 year later, 1955, June 10th, after Father became the administrator at the school, 1 month later he expired due to a heart attack. He was attending a special event over in Pennsylvania, and I guess really had a, if there's anything is such a way to go, I mean, Father had a beautiful last day on earth, because he was surrounded by priests and the bishop, and he was a priest for 23 years at our parish. And of course, his wife Marie Womack, and of course the sons of John, Gregory, and Tom were all part of the so-called Hazelden family.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all wonderful people. They still are.
Sure. I just recently met Mrs. Romack.
Did
I know.
You?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful person.
Gracious lady.
In fact, she was instrumental. I've been either a church usher or a church trustee or a church collector or church sign maker or church this or church that now since I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been, I was just turned 61, so I've been 50 years now. I've been in some capacity, and there's one point in time where I used to be the church treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my duty to collect, to count the money and also write checks. And I used to come to the parish house to work with Father Romack. And I was dating my wife in 1952, and of course in 53, Father John Romack married my wife and I in September 26, 1953. And of course, she went through my whole courtship, Mrs. Romack. And she has a lot of memories about my courtship.
What do you mean?
I used to come here and talk about my, you know, my new...
Your girlfriend.
My new girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And she was very pleased. She was very tickled for me. And she was one of my strongest supporters when I got married. And to this day, I have a lot of love and affection for her.
Mm-hmm. So do a lot of people,
you
I know.
Mm-hmm. But John Pahorlak was our first assistant pastor. And of course... since that time, I think some of our other assistants that we've had here at the parish were Father Yarnovitz in 1957 and 59. Then we had Father George Lasky in 1959 and 61. We had Father Leonard Hollick in 1961. We had Father Edward Lucas, who was here in 1962. There was another Lucas, I can't think of his first name, that was also here for a short time.
Oh, really?
And of course, after Father Romack died, we had the likes of Father Lefkulik, who was with us, and after Lefkulik, we had Father Anthony Koval, and after Father Anthony Koval, we had Monsignor Russell Duker, and of course, after Monsignor Russell Duker, we had the likes of Father Mahalik, Emil Mahalik, and mm-hmm. of course, today we have the infamous Dennis M. Bogdan,
mm-hmm.
who we all
Very
love.
Very infamous.
Who we all mm-hmm. love.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're answering all my questions for me, Ken. This is great. You're doing my job for
well,
me.
Well, I'm just trying to be accommodating,
fine.
Let's put it that
that's
way.
That's okay. Okay, one thing, going back to the early days now, somebody mentioned that there was a problem and Father Lipesky was asked to leave the church. Do you know anything about that?
That was before my time, seriously.
Okay.
And not whether there was anything
okay.
controversial. You know, at one time, they used to have what they call a president of the parish
yes, uh-huh.
and a vice president,
mm-hmm.
and
the trustees,
the so-called. Well, they were president. They used to have elections, and those
yeah.
elections were, you know, I think it's an honor to serve, not to be a demagogue,
right.
like some people want to be once they mm-hmm. become power. But that got to be a, sort of a political thing, and it was very, you know, it was an honor to serve at the time, and. I can remember some early days, maybe this had to do with something about a presidential election or some officers or some trustees, or maybe even had to do something with the church calendar, or he may have had to do something with the fact that the Holy See frowned on the ordination of married priests.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there was a lot of people left the church and went to churches around the corner that they started, which were
split the Orthodox,
uh-huh. and that was it. So mm-hmm. those memories, I do have one thing we're blessed with in my parish, and of course we did have, when I was growing up in the 30s and 40s, we had six who went to the sisterhood,
mm-hmm.
and we had seven that went to the priesthood, and of course we had three others who were at the time attending the seminary. So we had somewhere upwards of about 16 that were in the vocations in this parish. And of course,
we were blessed. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. These controversial things, such as the celibacy issue and the church trustees controlling the parish and these type of things, we're so far away from that now that it's not even... Some people don't even realize what went on, okay, especially in my age group. Now, when you were doing your research 25 years ago, was it difficult at that time to even talk about these things with people? Was
no.
it still a controversy? No,
no,
not
no
that.
It wasn't. And this is only 1962, and we celebrated
right.
our 50th
uh-huh.
anniversary.
Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, it was all passé. It was
mm-hmm.
nothing you
mm-hmm.
can do about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So
uh-huh.
actually, we were blessed to have the growth that we did have, and
mm-hmm.
I think that we didn't have to split. Because I know some families that did split and
yes,
became
uh-huh.
Orthodox,
mm-hmm.
especially when we changed the calendar. 1946, we had people get upset about that. But we took a vote. It was a mm-hmm. vote, and it was voted to change the calendar. And I don't think anybody regrets the fact that we have, in fact, almost everybody just about now follow that same
oh, sure.
same
mm-hmm.
pattern,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe the really severe Orthodox, and maybe that's about it.
And when I interviewed Mr. John Cole, he did tell me that that was a close vote when they took
yeah.
it, but that, you know, he did.
Well, John would have,
over.
John too, of blessed memory, would
yes.
have
mm-hmm.
stronger and closer memories to that
mm-hmm.
than I
Oh,
would.
I believe he was even president of the congregation oh, yeah. that year,
yeah.
he said.
Was he?
I think so.
How do you know that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said that Cantor Horvath especially influenced you in your childhood. Was there anybody else that especially influenced you?
Well, there were some church parishioners who I became identified with and worked with very closely, because we used to have bazaars, and they always used to lean toward Joe Garanchowski to paint the signs or to make the signs, Edward N. Fiffick, they call him Nick Fiffick,
mm-hmm.
was a strong influence on me. Some of the other parents, it was John Kowalczyk, who was also a blessed memory. Another gentleman who is now living in retirement in California, or I should say in Arizona, was Michael Senda. He was a church officer at the time that these fellows were grooming me
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up in the parish.
Okay.
And they were out, and of course Mr. Halliday, who lived right here to the rear of the parish, and his wife, Mary Halliday, were lovable people. And the Coley family, I mean, Joe Coley, Andy Cole, all these were close to, and Tony Cole were all strong people for me. And of course my uncle's John Graham, and of course my father died in 1928 when I was only 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't have too many memories of him, but
mm-hmm.
I do have memories of some of the other Garankowskis, the Garanchowskis and the Grahams, and but those are some of the ones that I had an influence on, especially my biggest influence on me was John Horvath, as far as one of our laypersons, and he was our cantor.
Okay.
I idolized that man. He had a beautiful voice, and he was a very, very affable person. Very affable.
Thank you. Okay, Ken, I saw on your biography sheet that you were in the U.S. Army Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, let's see, 1941 is when we were in supposedly in our war effort, and 1943 I graduated from high school in Camel at Camel Memorial. I enlisted in the service. I enlisted. I went to Detroit, Michigan to enlist, and we were disappointed as far as getting into the Navy. So a very good friend of mine and I, who went together, we decided to go down, and if the Navy didn't want us, because of, when I was a youngster, I had an eraser in my ear, and I guess that must have put a mark on my eardrum.
Oh.
And I don't have any difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the U.S. Air Force, and I was passed.
Hmm.
Maybe they were in dire need of some recruits. So in January, this was in 1943, in January, just around January 6th, I went to the service, and I went to what they call a cadet program, and I was in the service from 43 through 1946 when I come back, and I never left the country. I was always in training, either in electronics or in what they call a ground control approach, which had to do with guiding airplanes in through what they call 00 visibility weather. We were destined to go overseas in 1945, but at that time the VE Day came along, and we had enough people in the group that I was in, had enough so-called points to be considered for discharge, so they disbanded the group, and they gave us stateside assignments. I wound up with my last place being Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And that was my tenure. I came out as a staff sergeant in the U.S. Army Air Force. At that time it was called the U.S. Army Air Force.
Right.
Today it's called the U.S. Air Force.
I see. I wondered what the distinction was there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So I came back in 1946.
And then what did you do at that time?
46? Well, I worked here locally for Mr. Fiffick. In fact, Nick Fiffick gave me my first job when I came back at Lee Tire and Rubber Company. I was the assistant in the office, not a manager, but just an assistant in the office. Well, in other words, a clerk in the office. And did a lot of billing, did a lot of inventory control work. And then I used to also work as a theater usher at the Palace Theater.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for many years. Got well acquainted with a lot of stage show people. We had a band of our own in 1946. I played a saxophone after a fashion.
You did.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. We were called the Music of a Different Slant by Kenny Grant. And I put a T on the end.
Uh-huh, just to rhyme.
And I'll never forget, we were playing at the Cactus Bar on South Avenue, which was called the Prairie Room. And of course, we just got the booking there because of a relative of mine owned the place. And we had a sign. I had a sign made. I made it myself. Music of a Different Slant by Kenny Grant. And this fellow who was slightly inebriated was on the floor with his girlfriend. And he looked at my sign and he was sort of weaving back and forth. And he says, Music of a Different Slant by Kenny Grant. Try to dance to it and you can't. And that was a memory I had of the band. So then, of course, I don't know whether in 1947, I hit the big time at the age of 21. I became a press agent and talent scout for, and this is before your time, young lady.
Not many years.
For Horace Height.
Horace Height.
And his musical nights. We used to broadcast, national broadcast on Sunday nights at 10 to 10:30. We were sponsored by Philip Morris Cigarettes. You remember the call for Philip Morris? Well, that's who we were sponsored by. And my only claim to fame is that I auditioned while I was in New Orleans. We auditioned, not only did we look for talent in places, in other words, not only amateur talent, but professional talent who were being paid but never got national recognition or some kind of exposure for a break.
They weren't well known yet.
And we went down to New Orleans, and I was down on, during the whole time that I traveled with Horace Height, I traveled 33 states, all the provinces in Canada. We were in Europe for 2 weeks. And my only claim to fame, as I started to tell you, was the fact that we were auditioning, or not only we auditioned the schools, or we went to various other places, but we went to night spots at night to look for talent.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to this place called Eddie's Place on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And it was this trio, a trumpet player and a guitar player and I think a piano player. And we were impressed by the trumpeter because he used a triple tongue, and this is what Horace Height used to feature in his theme song.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked the waitress to have him come over and join us for a drink. We wanted to talk to him after for intermission. And he came over, and this big fella sat down in the chair and introduced himself as Albert Hirt, H-I-R-T. And needless to say, he didn't win our contest, but Height was impressed with him, and he asked him to join the band, which he did, but he wanted to get home as often as he could because he was the father of six children.
Is that right?
So then, of course, when Height went into semi-retirement in 1950, he got a shot for Al Hirt on Dinah Shore Chevy Show. Remember what the big
kid? Yeah, sure, I remember her.
So and since that time, he became a national prominent figure in the show business. Al Hirt.
Oh, that's really neat.
So he is one of our pride and joys as far as my memories are concerned.
Great. So how long did you stay with Horace Height, Kenny?
Well, I come back in 1951, and of course, almost everybody I'd been in contact with around here was I'd lost contact with. The guy was gone for 4 or 5 years. But it was an education, to say the most, for the experience. And of course, when I was an usher at the Palace Theater, I can remember a lot of the big bands that used to come to town, and I was familiar with the big band era, and I still have a lot of the love and affection. I had a collection of big band cassette tapes, and also big band 7-inch reel tapes, such as Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Jimmy Dorsey, Duke Ellington, Claude Thornhill, which is a name that you probably don't remember, which were Charlie Spivak, quite a few, Louis Prima, Stan Kenton, who I also was with for a short time as a publicity man in 1951, and also Fred Waring, which I was with him for a short time. He's out of Pennsylvania. Of course, he just died here not too long ago. Mm-hmm. But also one of the big talents that we had in the Horace Height show, and he's still living today, I don't know whether he's still performing, was the Rudolph Valentino of the accordion, better known as Dick Contino, which he was one of the first talents that won the so-called the quarterly contest, and he won the big prize, which is on the same par or same level as Star Search that Ed McMahon has now on TV.
Uh-huh.
But we weren't on TV. We were on radio on Sunday nights. Every Sunday night, national broadcasting from 10 to 10:30, and we used to travel throughout the country looking for talent. And Horace Height used to put these shows on. And then, of course, when he went into retirement, he gave me the choice to either come back to Newcastle, Pennsylvania, which was my last stop, or go to California, and that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose the lesser of two evils, and I come back to Newcastle, and that was my last stop, and I come back to Youngstown. And it was 1951, and of course, shortly after that, 2 years later, I got married to Mildred Holeko, who's mm-hmm. my wife, and of mm-hmm. course, we have three children.
How'd you meet your wife?
I only dated my wife on New Year's Eve, ironically. That's
Is that
all.
Right?
That's all. I was introduced to her by a cousin of mine who was a church parishioner here, and she's married to Dr. Richley now at the university.
Your
Mary
cousin.
Mary mm-hmm. Richley, Mary Byers. She's married to Dr. Victor Richley, and of course, she's the one introduced me to my wife because they were girlfriends. They were going to Youngstown College together.
Uh-huh.
And I got married in 1953. I finished my degree work in 1956 and also in 1959. Went for my master's over at Kent State, the Kent State program. And in 1960, I taught at Wyish at Youngstown College and at Youngstown University and at Youngstown State University until 1978. I was a limited service faculty member in the School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
So from 1960 to 1978, I taught up there for 18 years. In the School of Business, mostly marketing, sales promotion courses, salesmanship, executive protocol, business letters and reports, insurance, real estate. They're all in the School of Business, which I enjoyed immensely. And to this day, even ironically, just 2 days ago, I ran into two of my students. I was over in Canfield at a town hall meeting for the job I identify with now, which is the county commissioners, and we had a town hall meeting in Canfield, and two men in the audience came forward and says, you know, we had you as an instructor in 1970,
mm-hmm.
or we had you as an instructor in 1972 was the other one, and they still have memories of the class that they related to me.
But that makes you feel
and
good.
It makes you feel good. Uh-huh. That makes you really feel good. So I have some pleasant memories of those days.
Very good. Let's see. Just one question going back to your broadcast that you were doing on the Sunday nights. Where was that broadcast from?
Usually from a theater. I mean,
it was live.
Oh, like, for example, when we came to Youngstown, we played the Palace Theater. And when the broadcast was from the stage of the Palace Theater.
Okay.
Or if we played in New York City, we broadcast from the Capitol Theater and down on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we... in Rochester, New York, it was also the Keith Albee Theater, which is, at that time you had the Keith Albee chain, or it was the Warner Brothers Theater or something like that. But or else, if we, in the summertime, if we played engagements, we had what we called units. We'd play fair dates, like you do at the Canfield Fair,
mm-hmm.
Or any of the other small county fairs that you have throughout the country.
Oh, okay.
But not Horace Hite himself. These are what we call the units that Horace would put together, which was called the Youth Opportunity Program Winners. And he put a show together, and it was called the Horace Hite Youth Opportunity Winners. And we'd have somebody like Dick Contino would head one up, and maybe Al Hurt would head another one up, and maybe Pat Therry, all a banjo player, would head it up another one. And we had about 15 pieces of talent, and then go traveling and entertain people.
Oh, okay.
And they became professionals in that way. But that was
a good experience.
That was quite an experience. And of course, like I said, when I come back here is when I made up my mind to go back to college and get my degree. And of course, we got married in 53.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the political arena since 1966.
Is that when you started in the mayor's office?
No, I started with the, the mayor's office. But the mayor at that time was Anthony B. Flask,
mm-hmm.
who is now also a blessed memory. But I started out what they call a community renewal program coordinator, which was to study the community for the next 10, 20 years as to where we were going. And I'll never forget Dr. Bonzer, who was a student at Wilson High School. He was his alma mater. But he was a professor at, they call it the Bonzer Report. He made an economic study for us, for the community of Youngstown, in the Youngstown area. And everything that's happening today, he predicted.
Really?
The demise of the steel industry, the deterioration of the central business district,
mm-hmm.
The affluency going out to the suburbs, to suburbia, the suburbia shopping centers, which some of them were already in place at the time. But everything he talked about in his report, Bonzer Report, came to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now, maybe we didn't have that foresight, maybe we didn't believe such things as a steel mill is going to close in 1977. We didn't, those were memories that nobody wants to believe, and it's very difficult to believe, and already it's been 9 years. So, in fact, I know when I became the water commissioner in 1978, the year before that is when Mayor Hunter was the last year of his term for the city of Youngstown. He, September 19th, 1977 is when they closed, when he announced his closing of the steel mills. And of course, it was very difficult. Nobody would ever think that the steel mill would ever close in this valley. And it's very difficult even for me to this day to comprehend such a catastrophic deterioration of an industry. And of course, we did rely on one particular industry, and that was steel. And maybe the same thing might happen to us if we don't do something about bringing in smaller industries and diversifying.
Mm-hmm.
We always try to preach diversification, but at that time, but for whatever reasons, you had to overcome a lot of political entities, and it just made it difficult to, especially when the steel market and the, for what it's worth, the Chamber of Commerce at that time was steel-oriented, and of course they wanted to keep any and all other industries out of here who competed for the skilled labor force. Now we have a skilled labor force, but nobody to put in the work for or with. I think, in all my travels, and I've traveled quite a bit in the service and with Horace Hite, maybe it's because it's my hometown, I always had the urge to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But in all my travels, I have never seen an area that has people who are warm at heart, dedicated to what they want to do as far as a family unit is concerned. And they had what they call a camaraderie, and maybe it's because of the influence, because it's my hometown, but I noticed that in almost everywhere I went, that Youngstown always had something, although we didn't have exactly a good reputation because of some of the element that persisted in this valley. But I think we have a lot of good people here, and I think we're going to make a little comeback, but it's going to take some time, maybe the next 10 years.
Okay, with what you just told me in mind, and relating to the Bonzer Report and the community renewal What do you see as the future for our church in this area right around here?
Well, I've always been a think positive person.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Very optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I'm not exactly a pessimistic person. I'm a fellow who looks at half a glass of water and says it's half full instead of half empty. We have some problems in our parish. Let's face reality. We've had a dwindling parish.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently I was talking to the Southside funeral director, and they've been in business now for 41 years. I mean, the young, 41 months, I'm sorry, 41 months. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the young boys.
Yeah, when they took over.
When they took mm-hmm. over, young Mike and his brother. And in 41 months that they've been operating.
Just a little over 3 years.
They've had 62 deaths from our parish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've heard Father time and time again how many baptisms we've had.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a declining parish population. How long that's going to continue before it takes a change for the... And I was just talking to another person yesterday, or 2 days ago, in Canfield. They started out with 100 families at the St. Michael's Parish in Canfield. Now they've grown to a point where they're almost 1,000 families in that area. But we've become more and more, and of course Father Dennis advocates the same thing, a cosmopolitan parish instead of a national parish,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
He's trying to encourage, you don't have to be a Slovak to be a member of this parish.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of ethnics in this parish. We have a lot of people from other countries who belong to our parish, whose heritage goes back to other countries who belong to our parish, and we're more cosmopolitan. Now, Father Sunday, this past Sunday, was talking about this youth mass that we're having.
Right, I'm involved with that.
This mm-hmm. Sunday. I thought that was music to my ears,
because
I've been preaching that for the longest mm-hmm. time, that we should get... I'm tired of being an usher in church,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just come to church and sit down and enjoy the Mass and enjoy the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see the young people become church ushers, church collectors. In fact, I'll hang around with them. It'll make me feel younger too, probably. But when you mentioned about this church mass, this youth mass, as they call it, and they're going to sing, and they might introduce some songs into the parish which have never been sung before, I mean, hey, let's face reality. You have to change with the times. And I think it's going to be, I think it's a blessing.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be very successful. And we're hoping that we can generate enough interest to keep the parish where it's at, because you can't duplicate this church. You know, some people say, well, forget about it. You should demolish the church and build a new church for yourself out there at Shady Run Grove. It's easier said than done. Now, the neighborhood down here has become stable. It's not anything to be afraid of.
No.
We have a nice setting. In fact, those who have surrounding properties, business people, have improved their property to a point where we set in a nice area. We're not in a what they call a really totally blighted area. In fact, it's been rejuvenated.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in the process of looking at renovating the exterior of our church. And it's very expensive, let's face it. But I think with the proper guidance of our pastor and the proper guidance of those who are interested in this parish, we can probably renovate the church and have it last for another number of years and keep it here in this area. It's nice to say, let's build another church, or it's nice to say, well, I'd like to take this church and put it on a truck and move it to the picnic grove if I can do that, you know. But you can't do it. You just can't do it. And to give this up, well, I don't know.
I've become real attached to it myself.
How old are you now?
I'm 35, and I've only been a member since we got married 14 years ago.
So I have a lot of memories here, and of course I want to see it stay here, but
mm-hmm.
Hey, I would, if they felt that they could put this on a truck and move it, fine, but it can't be done. The only way you can get rid of it, I mean, you can do anything about moving the church is to is to let this thing deteriorate and have it demolished and sell a land off to somebody and build another church. For example, like St. Matthias had a beautiful church.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was demolished. Now there's an empty
freeway, right?
Because of the freeway. Well, it was right near the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
But now it didn't affect them. That church could have still been standing today. But why did he demolish it? I don't know. But I guess they were able to sell the land after that.
Oh.
And today they have the church that they have up there on Cornell and off of Shady Run Road.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone, you know, you hear some of these younger folks all gung ho. Let's build a church at the Picnic Grove. We have a lot of room up there. Put it, I'd like to see it there if I could. I mean, a new church, but there's nothing wrong with the church we have here.
And there's too many memories attached to this too. And the history is just beautiful, really.
And it's got a lot of. And of course, the strong influence of the dirt is not here anymore. The smoke pollution, the steel mill pollution.
No.
We lived with for so many years, but I think we are becoming a cosmopolitan parish, and we've got to try to how we're going to bring. I guess what Father's doing now is the only way we're going to do it, is to try to introduce youth participation in the masses, youth participation in the singing, youth participation in whatever functions we have in the church, youth participation in operating of the church, get them involved. I know, I'm not saying I was remiss in raising my three children, because we did everything we could to keep them interested, but there was, and I hate to say this, but we've had some priests that didn't give a tinker's damn for the youth,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this one here, for what it's worth, I think he cares about it.
Sure, I know that.
And it's necessary, but we took everything for granted before, you know, we say, well, you know, church will be here forever. Well, it's here, but we're struggling. We're struggling today, not financially at this point. Not
mm-hmm.
We're struggling with a deteriorating or declining population
mm-hmm.
of our parish.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a bright future.
Good.
If we can get the youth involved, because they're the future. I'm still a young man as far as I'm concerned. I figure I have
a lot of good years.
A lot of good years ahead of me. And listen, you know, there's one thing I have to mention about the church. We have some priceless paintings on our ceilings in that church and on our walls,
uh-huh.
which were painted back in, I think it was 1946, by Paul Daubner, D-A-U-B-N-E-R. And they were beautifully restored by, I think, Rudolf Rohn. We had our 50th anniversary. Rudolf Rohn.
Oh, they were?
ROH. Yeah, they were restored by, touched up and cleaned up and painted by Rudolf Rohn in 1962. And that was when we had our 50th anniversary. So that's something we have to be very proud of too. And of course, you don't have those types of paintings anymore in churches.
I know.
You know, a lot of churches are getting rid of all their statues and paintings.
That
and what
contemporary
have
look. Uh-huh.
In fact, I sort of miss the communion rail at our church. We used to have a communion rail at our church. Of course, there was talk of one time putting up the gates.
Icon screen.
Iconostas for the front. But I don't know whatever happened to that. We were at a point one time where we were going to do that. And we never did.
Do you remember why the communion rail was taken down?
Well, we have the line now. You stand in line to go to communion.
Mm-hmm.
So. At one time, you used to stand in line and go to communion and have your communion rail, and Father would go back and forth, back and forth, issuing communion at a kneeling at a communion rail. But then they took the communion rail away. I don't recall who it was. I think it was Father. I think it was Father Romack, one of the Father John before he passed away, the first one, Father John S., the father, and he took the communion rail away. But that's been a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have a nice parish. We have some nice, beautiful grounds. And, of course, it takes money to keep it up to date. We did wonders with our parish house. Our parish house has been restored beautifully.
This is an old home, too, isn't it? About 100 years old or so?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And the exterior has been redone, thanks to some of our volunteers in our parish who administer the work, such as Nick Yakovone, who took a keen interest, who takes a keen interest in our parish, and we have a lot of men who still take a keen interest in the parish, and mm-hmm. are dedicated, and they work for gratis, you know. But we've come a long way, and of course we struggle with the bingo games and the pierogies so we can support the school,
mm-hmm.
and support the school. And I don't know, I never once were we had to pay a tuition at that school. But I always felt I dedicated myself to my church to make sure I was appreciative of what they did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because all three of my children went to school there, and of course I have one now that teaches there.
I know.
And mm-hmm. Debbie, and of course Karen was a student there, and I can remember the graduation, and Kenny was a student there. They went the full 8 years through the parochial school there. And I have a lot of memories in that respect too. Of course, our picnic grove. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, I think we have one of the nicest properties as far as a picnic grove is concerned anywhere.
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm. And we should be proud of it. And that's when we organized in 1970. I was the president for 8 years of the St. Nicholas Byzantine Men's Association. And then we also organized the St. Nicholas Byzantine Ladies Association, what they call the BLA.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask you. You said you started it in 1970?
Yeah.
Okay, what was the purpose of organizing that group?
Father Les Kulik had a steak dinner. He wanted to get together some interest, to show some interest to develop that property to what it is today. And because all it was, all we had out there was, in fact, Father, we used to have a Biroi house on, I don't know whether you knew this or not, it used to be in Youngstown Poland Road. In that little, first it was in a house.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a house. I forget whose house it was. Then, of course, it became, then we moved into the building, which is now Grace Roof Cleaners.
In
a little
plaza.
Yeah,
I know where that is.
And then we built the Pidoy house over at the Pitney Grove. Everyone thought we made a big mistake, but I'll tell you one thing. I think it was one of the best moves we ever made.
Oh, sure.
And we wanted to expand it more and also try to raise funds for the church. And we made the property, we dedicated ourselves to the property, to improve the property.
Okay.
And any monies that we had, we also told Father Lev Kulik and then later Father Koval,
mm-hmm.
that whatever monies we had would be available to the church for whatever needs were necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to raise sufficient funds to take care of the picnic grove. We maintained the picnic grove from the standpoint of utilities. We took care of the we still take care of the taxes, and of course the insurance on the grounds. And of course the improvements recently were done jointly with the parish, because originally we had done some other improvements about 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
I see.
And today I think we have a beautiful edifice, mm-hmm. out there. You couldn't replace that property for, I don't think, for $500,000.
So your purpose originally was to improve that property,
at
the
that
Shady
property, and to maintain, mm-hmm. any and all financial obligations to the church in, mm-hmm. their needs for whatever was necessary at the church and also any other properties that we had.
Okay.
So anything we did for the church.
Yeah.
All monies were the church's money. Mm-hmm. Not they didn't, mm-hmm. belong to any one specific organization or club. And of course the Byzantine ladies, then to this day, they always come up with a donation to our treasury, $1,000 sometime or better. Then we had the Byzantine Youth Organization, which was
right.
BYA,
mm-hmm.
the Byzantine Youth Association,
mm-hmm.
which was functional till they organized the youth ministries here under Father Dennis when he first came here. So we don't have the BYA anymore.
It changed over.
Yeah,
it
changed over to a different philosophy and,
mm-hmm.
thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember, I have a lot of memories myself, pleasant memories of going on some trips. And
with the youth group.
With the youth, mm-hmm. group were unheard of, to places like Orlando, Florida, for vacation, and which were some of the things that the girls or the kids worked for, and when they were doing car washes or rummage sales or paper drives or what have you. And of course you had to be a functionary, you had to earn certain points. And but I also was the president of the BMA for 8 years, 8 consecutive terms.
Okay. From the beginning of it.
In 1970, we organized it till 78 when I relinquished it. Since that time, we've had other officers serving in that capacity. But...
Is that when you were honored as the Byzantine Man of the Year?
As the Byzantine Man of the Year in 1970, I think it was 78, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, I happen to have the wristwatch on my wrist.
Oh,
here it is. 1979, I was honored as Byzantine Man of the Year.
Was that the first time that award was given?
Nope.
No?
We had, the first award was 1975. We had two honorees at that time. The first honorees were Mike Zakasy and Andy Plachinski. They were Nick Rissick.
Okay.
Nick Rissick. They were the first two honorees. And the second, second year we only had one honoree, and that was Andy Plachinski. And then the third honoree, I think, was it Steve Slavens or Nick Yakubon? I think it was Steve Slavens, then Nick Yakubon, and then Ken Grant. Steve Slavens was the third honoree. And then, of course, the fourth honoree in the fourth year was Nick Yakubon, and, of course, I was in 1979. And since that time, we've had others who have been honored.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, this year we'll have our affair in February. And we'll be picking another honoree. Now, the honoree this year will be picked by the past honorees. We meet together. There's nine of us now, I think. And we cast our vote for one person, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
And whoever has a majority, we try to evaluate those who, participate in, not only at the Grove, but throughout the entire church. So. Sometimes you don't make friends because you don't appoint some people that are right away, but eventually we'll get to them all.
But is that limited to the membership in the BMA?
No.
No? It isn't? Oh, okay.
As far as the BMA...
The Man of the Year.
Man of the Year, yes.
That has to be somebody from the group.
Because it's called the Byzantine Man of the Year, and of course it's from the BMA.
Yeah, okay.
And all of them so far have been... I don't see why it couldn't be anybody else, but been from the Byzantine Men's Association, so I would assume maybe that's, I don't think that was one of our criteria, but it's happened that way. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened that way. That doesn't mean that somebody else can't be.
I didn't know if there was a restriction on that or not.
No, and then we also started the St. Nicholas Day. We never had a St. Nicholas Day dinner.
Oh, really? You started that?
Oh, yeah. We started that with the St. Nicholas Byzantine Men's Association under Father Koval. And our first chairpersons for the first annual St. Nicholas Day dinner dance were Mr. and Mrs. Michael Gozier. They were our first chairpeople. I appointed them to be... When I was president of the Byzantine Men's Association, I asked Mike and I asked his wife to become our first chair people, and they did a beautiful job. And of course, it's been an ongoing thing ever since.
Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, let's see. I'm trying to think. Was it 19? Does anyone know what year this one is coming up? Do we have anything on the ticket that says 10th annual or 9th annual?
I don't know.
This is what, 1986? I would say it's about the 10th one. It's about the 10th anniversary right now. So it started in 1976.
You said Father Koval, maybe even before then, huh?
No, no, Father...
Did you say it was under
Father Koval was here. 1975 was the first one. I'll tell you why. His father was our main speaker. He was the Monsignor Koval.
Really?
From Pennsylvania, from Hazleton, Pennsylvania. And we had it at the school, school on Youngstown Portland Road. It was a beautiful affair. And it's been ongoing tradition ever since.
Yeah, that's a nice custom. I like that. Did you have the tradition of bringing in St. Nicholas at that time?
Yes.
Even for that dinner?
Well, I don't think for the first one we did. But ensuing years is when we started to do that. And we have what they call the Yasličkare.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, in the men's organization, we used to go every year. We take the bus. Either get Mike Zakasy or Joe Valco, who were bus drivers for the school system at that time, because they had their own buses when we used to bus the kids to Byzantine Catholic Central School.
Mm-hmm.
And each church had their own buses. And in fact, to this day, they still have their own buses.
But at least one.
Yeah.
From each.
So we used to go caroling
on the bus
to the old folks or the shut-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And also we used to take into consideration the pirogi workers. We'd start out in the evening at the Grove about 6 or 7 o'clock, get back about 11. And we'd cover, anywhere from 20 to 25 homes. And we'd get out of the bus, go up to the porch and sing, not accept any contribution or nothing, just sing mm-hmm. and wish mm-hmm. them a happy Christmas and leave. And then, of course, when we got back to the Grove, we had some coffee or some refreshments for the folks. And that was a lot of memories there.
Sure.
Plus, we used to sell Christmas trees.
We used to sell
Christmas trees at your choice, $5 a piece. And we used to go down and get them in 1970, I think 70, we also started that back in the early, in the 70s. We used to go down to East Palestine to a very good friend of mine's farm, Joe Baytos, B-A-Y-T-O-S, and cut our own trees down. And I used to get the check and take it down to him, or the money, cash.
Mm-hmm.
We'd pay him $3 at the time for a Christmas tree.
Wow.
We'd cut them ourselves, uh-huh. and then we'd sell them for $5. We'd make $2, big, mm-hmm. big purchase. Then they finally went up to $7, and your pick, whatever pick you wanted. And I think when he finally stopped selling them, I think we were getting about $8 or $10 a tree. But it got to a point where we were running out of Christmas trees for one thing. And we used to get all the Christmas trees for the church, for the manger, and for the lighting and decorating of the church
mm-hmm.
itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think some of those same people, like Nick Rissick, who is a fantastic man in our parish, and Andy Pluchinski, they still go out and cut those trees.
Mm-hmm.
I think they go out somewhere in Lake Milton and bring them in here for not to sell, but to decorate the mm-hmm. church with. And you have to give credit to people like Emil Kraniak and those folks who decorate the church, along with the what's her name, Mary Hlevak used to be very much involved with that, and also the I can't think of their names right now, but they live on. They used to own the city office in
Bosax.
Bosax. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
they were involved, and they
mm-hmm.
still are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to give those kind of people credit for what they do. And
sure.
Nobody ever pats them on the back, so to speak. But I think, in the eyes of God, they feel that they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't walk across water. I'm not that pious. But I have a lot of love and affection and deep feeling for my church. And I do all I can for my church, and I'll continue to do it until I expire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a situation where I would love to see my grandchildren come here, but they don't live here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they're of the Roman Rite now, mm-hmm. because they married Roman Rite husbands. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so right now, even my wife doesn't come here to church that often, because she's a Roman Rite. She has a lot of love and
sure.
affection
mm-hmm.
for her parish, although she came here when the kids were growing, the whole time. And
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. you know, there were some strong feelings by some priests who were here before about people who were supposedly, if I'm, for example, a Byzantine, I belong to this parish, regardless of what my wife is, she should come to this parish. And
mm-hmm.
they made me feel uncomfortable. It
mm-hmm.
was sinful. But my wife goes to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
She comes here with me when she can, but she goes to fit her schedule sometime. And some priests frowned on that.
They weren't very tolerant of
no,
that.
No, no.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Dennis is very understanding
mm-hmm.
in that respect.
Yeah, he is.
I like to see my wife when people come to church here, but I'm not going to force anybody to go to church as long as they go to church.
Okay, Ken, is there anything else that you feel that is important that we didn't cover yet?
Well, since 1962, we've had various priests here, as we mentioned before, after Father Romack passed away, and of course, I have to give a lot of credit to people like Father Lefkulik, who came in here with some bad times. We had some strong financial
obligations.
Yeah. We had. I can't fault Father Romack, because he was sick, and he tried his best, and but we did run into some problems to the extent that we, Father Left Kulik put us on a situation where we were able to recoup some of our obligation to making the chair, making the parish more stable from a standpoint of finances. And then Father Koval, well, you'd have to understand Father Koval, I think you do. He was here, and of course he was a priest who he may have had some shortcomings, but he still was a priest. And of course the other one, Father Duker, other people don't have too much respect for him because he was sort of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
He put us on a financial path that we're at today. And of course, after Father Duker, we had the likes of Father Mihalik, and of course now we have Father Dennis. But and we have people in the parish who were dedicated to doing things for the parish, which also kept us going. So I think we can be proud of our cemetery. We have a beautiful cemetery out in Camel. I think we'd be proud of our property that we have on Shady Run Road. It's well kept, it's well maintained. We can be proud of the Pidoy House and the women or the ladies who work in that Pidoy House. We can be proud of the Byzantine Ladies organization. We can be proud of the church groups that we have here at the church, which is the Hazelton and Lansingville political clubs, the women's political clubs, and the ladies guild, and so on and so forth. And the I think our coffee socials are great. We don't have that much attendance, but those who attend get a chance to socialize. Those who don't attend don't know what they're missing.
That's right.
Because I think it's a good thing. Our St. Nicholas Day dinner dance has become very successful over the years. Everything we do, I mean, even our, I've been a steak fry chairman for the Byzantine men's organization at the Grove. We don't make a ton of money, but we make a few dollars where people always keep coming back for our steak fries because they get a good product and they get good camaraderie and they get a good atmosphere, and we give them their money's worth, so to speak, and we make a few dollars to boot. So the fundraisers we have, like our turkey dance or turkey raffle, I think is great. The festivals that we have in the summertime, I think have been a tradition for many years, although they're probably not as children-oriented as they knew they should be. I mean, children's rides and stuff like that, for whatever reason, we seem to forget those. But it's very difficult, I guess, to get rides.
Yeah, it is.
But you know what, I think we seem to fall away from picnics. We don't have any more picnics, so to speak. But
we tried a few years back.
Yeah, we did, but we have all we have is our festival now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think all of these are pluses for our parish. We try our best to. I think we miss one thing. We miss is the choir.
Uh-huh.
We don't have a choir. Mm-hmm. And I can remember, I have a tape at home, which I would like very much someday for Father to hear, and even yourself. I have Father Horvath's first mass on tape.
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm.
And his father singing. It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the men's choir singing.
Mm-hmm.
I have an Easter mass, or the men's choir singing the Easter mass at home on tape. It's a 7-inch reel, though. It's not a cassette. And
uh-huh.
So I have a lot of memories.
Good.
And we have a lot of dedicated men today. Mike Gozier, a very dedicated person. Red Vrabel, another dedicated person. Joe Baez, who has taken a strong dedication for his parish and giving a lot of time. Mike Zakasi, Andy Kachuha, you name them, we've got them.
Mm-hmm.
And women, not to mention Mary Lou Shirilla and a few others. And we have a lot of people at the parish, Sophie Yakovone and Marge Cole and Doris Slavens. And I'm going to be naming names. You know, I'm going to miss somebody. I'm going to be in trouble with some. But
And many others.
And many others, and many others. My mother worked at the Pirohi House for a long time until she could no longer go because of her age. They all have a lot of memories out there, and of course that's what's important. I think the future is very delightful for St. Nicholas Parish, St. Nicholas Byzantine Catholic Parish, because sometimes we have to more or less identify where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think 1898 Wilson Avenue will be here for many, many, many years to come. And
do you have any words of wisdom for the future
words
generation?
Of wisdom. Uh-huh. Words of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Think positive. That's the best word I can come up with. I know I advocate that in city government and now in county government. And you got to think positive because there's too many negative people and too many negative thinkers. We have them in our parish. But you got to just think positive that the parish is going to limp along right now. That's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll be able to restore our mobility to the point where our young people will be able to carry on even more forcefully than maybe. You know, I can't understand. When I was growing up, we didn't have, you know, like you have in this youth mass now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We never had those considerations for youth at all. And yet we were strong. I guess it's because they were demanded.
Mm-hmm.
My parents never said, you got to go to church. You got to go to church. If you don't, we're going to beat you. Never. I went because they went.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoyed it. I got, you know, in fact, we'd go to Mass, and everything was in Russian or Russian. Po-na-shom.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand all that singing myself, even to this day. I don't understand all of the, I know the songs. I can sing the Slovak songs or the Russian song. But what they mean, I was glad when English came, you know, when we started English Mass, because we participated. But for whatever reasons, I still enjoy the Byzantine Slovak Mass on at 9 o'clock on Sundays, and that's why I go to 9 o'clock Mass. I don't consider myself an old fogey, but I enjoy that Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Just parts of it, the songs that we sing, Ishe Kerovini, Ochenash, and all those songs that we sing in Slovak sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the songs when we go to communion. I just, for whatever it's worth, I enjoy that. Those are memories that I have that I just want to keep. And I used to go all the time 11 o'clock Mass, but now I go 9 o'clock Mass, and I enjoy it. I really enjoy 9 o'clock Mass. Now, I'm not too strong or not too keen on 5:15 Mass or 7 o'clock Mass on Saturdays. This is my own
mm-hmm.
feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone because of only of for utility purpose.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's about the only reason. But I think Sunday's Mass should be Sunday, and that's it. And of course, with the dwindling parish that we have now, whether 7 o'clock Mass on Saturday is, I guess you have those who would probably leave the church if you gave up that Mass. But look at 9 o'clock Mass. There's only about 100 people in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we had the 10 o'clock Mass, only in the summertime, we had a full church practically.
Right.
We're not the big parish of yesteryear. We've had too many people die off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if we think positive and give this Father Dennis the support that he needs, which I think our parishioners are giving him the support that he needs. I think this celebration that's coming up, which will be kicking off December 6th with the St. Nicholas Day dinner dance and the 1 year celebration of the Diamond Jubilee or Diamond Anniversary, I think will hopefully restore some pride in some people and maybe even get them more involved. As far as, in fact, I understand that I haven't had the opportunity to go to one of those family type things that you folks have organized. I understand the attendance has been fantastic, and it's been very supportive and been very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the, you got to get a priest who has the enthusiasm that this one has.
Yeah, we're lucky right now.
And I don't condemn any of the former priests, don't get me wrong.
I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
But, and maybe Father Dennis is not perfect either, but he has, I think he's on the right track, in my own opinion. And think positive. Just think positive. And think positive at YSU, and and you'll get your degree, and you'll be teaching school pretty soon. What's your ambition, to teach school?
I already have my teaching certificate, and I did teach. Right now I'm going back into the counseling program.
Oh, the counseling
mm-hmm.
program.
Mm-hmm.
So you have
your
degree.
I just got accepted, yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything else you want to say in relation to this?
That's all, except that think positive.
Thank you. Thank you, I will.